Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Critically Reclaimed, the podcast where we're recording at Whitney's apartment.
That's right, so the ambience might be a little different. Yeah, the ambient background noises.
His refrigerator insists on making a cameo, so it's a little vibratey back there. My name is William Bibbiani. I'm a critic. Everybody calls me Bibbs.
My name is Whitney Seibold. I, too, am a critic, the one with the noisy fridge.
Yeah, that's how you know it's good. That's how you know it's doing its job. I ain't going to let nothing get warm.
A quiet fridge is a little suspicious.
Right. Anyway, this is Critically Reclaimed, where we review movies that are selected by our patrons over at patreon.com/Critically Acclaimed Network. We're watching older movies on various streaming services that either Whitney and or myself, for one reason or another, dang it, we just ain't seen it.
I mean, nobody's seen everything, so we're taking the opportunity to explore the streaming services around us, because there are a lot of great films available,
and
fill in our own education.
And it's a great opportunity for everyone who follows us on Patreon to force us to watch whatever the hell you want us to watch. And this time, on Critically Reclaimed, we are talking about romance movies on Tubi, and the winner was a film that won an Academy Award for Best Supporting Actress, has been remade by Adam Sandler. And, not enough people talk about it, so let's just jump right into Cactus Flower.
Yeah, I've got a perfect setup. Why spoil it by getting married?
I am no sex goddess, but I haven't spent my life in a tree.
Miss Dickinson, you could do me a great service. You see, I'm desperately in need of a wife. You always stand up there like that?
Well, nobody around here looks. Most of our customers are classical.
Okay, the way you said it, you made it sound like an action thriller.
It's badass!
Welcome to Cactus Flower.
Yeah, where everything's spiky!
Cactus Flower is one of those wacky infidelity romances.
Isn't that fun?
But there's no real infidelity, which is the gag of the movie.
Ha ha ha! Everything's sort of fine, except we're lying about how everything is fine. Nothing actually bad is happening, except we're lying about it, and that makes a bunch of bad things happen. It's kind of a weird fleck.
This is based on a French play, like one of those bedroom farces, and it feels very French.
Yeah.
Because the French invented infidelity. Yeah. So,
I feel like there's a few mentions of it in the Bible, but okay.
Well, French people in the Bible.
Oh, I apologize. Yeah.
It was known as Gaul back then. The Gauls invented infidelity. Vercingetorix was there.
Oh, God.
It's based on a play. It was written by I.A.L. Diamond, Billy Wilder's notorious co-screenwriter and famed screenwriter of his own.
You might know his work from co-writing, say, The Apartment, which is one of the best screenplays ever written.
Mm. And this one has, I guess, some similarities. It feels similar to me.
It's definitely of an ilk. It's an interesting story about middle-aged people in love and younger people just sort of
figuring out middle-aged people.
Yeah, which is, listen, I'm middle-aged. It ain't no easy feat. the film stars Goldie Hawn as a young woman who is dating Walter Matthau. And now he is a married man with three kids, except he's not. He told her he's married with three kids so that she wouldn't push him for a commitment.
Yeah, he just wants to have a fling, and rather than commit to Goldie Hawn and marry her, he is pretending that he's sneaking around on a wife that he doesn't have.
And by the way, this is the late 60s. This is a very young Goldie Hawn. This is like her third movie, technically. They say introducing, but she had a very blink and you'll miss it. She was an extra in the MST3K movie Sidehackers.
That's right.
Allegedly. I don't know how true that is, but allegedly that's true. And she was actually, her first movie was like some kind of weird musical thing with Kurt Russell.
Yeah, the genuine family band.
Yeah, which I've never seen, but I guess that's where they met.
The one and only genuine original family band is the title of the movie.
Yeah, I guess that's where they met. In case you didn't know, Goldie Hawn and Kurt Russell have been like, I don't think they're actually married.
They were never married. They've just been together for forever.
Yeah, and good for them. Apparently, they've made it work. This is her breakout role, and boy, is it a good one. And what happens is Walter Matthau, at the beginning of the movie, she has been jilted by Walter Matthau on a date. She decides, and she tries to go through with it to end her own life. A neighbor ends up stopping it, but not before she sent him the note in the mail. So he gets the note. He thinks that he's pushed this lie way too far. And he decides to say, listen, my wife's going to divorce me. I want to get married to you. And Goldie Hawn says, that's great. I want to meet your wife. And he's like, shit. Oh, this is going to get complicated.
He's a dentist.
Yeah.
And he's
Walter... The sexiest profession there is.
I love this period of, like, the late 60s to mid-70s when guys like Walter Matthau could be sex symbols.
Yeah, it was all based on personality.
Yeah, Walter Matthau is like a walking meatball. He's he's got this kind of hangdog expression, but he's also very expressive and he's very you know, very animated. He's very charming.
He's not an unattractive man, but he definitely has never been a supermodel.
No, but yeah. I'm also, you know... Jack Lemmon, frequent co-star with Walter Matthau, also a sex symbol. The one that everyone might have their minds blown over is Elliot Gould, who was the sexiest man alive.
Elliot Gould was legitimately considered the sexiest man alive in the 1970s. Mm. Elliot Gould, not a bad-looking man, but today he would not be considered a contender.
Wonderful actor. I will never impugn his talent, but compared to sort of the chiseled superhero-looking guys we have today, looks a little bit different, that's all.
So now he needs to find himself a ringer, himself someone to pretend to be his wife, and he doesn't actually know a lot of women. The only woman he knows, who he knows well enough to even ask such a thing, is his nurse at his dentist practice, who is played by, holy shit, Ingrid Bergman, who hadn't made a movie in America in quite a few years.
This movie came out in 69, and here's how embarrassed... a little embarrassing faux pas I did. I didn't know she was in the movie.
Ah.
I just knew about Walter Matthau and Goldie Hawn. I didn't know this was also an Ingrid Bergman movie.
Oh, yeah.
She shows up on screen and I said, oh, look, Isabella Rossellini. Oh, it's like, oh, no, wait.
That's hilarious. Isabella Rossellini is Ingrid Bergman's daughter.
And
they look alike.
Look alike and they sound
alike. They have a lot of similarities. Mm-hmm. Ingrid Bergman... First off, one of the greatest actors who ever lived.
Mm.
If you haven't seen, I don't know, Notorious or Anastasia or Gaslight, Casablanca, Murder in the Orient Express, the Sidney Lumet version, she's a genius. She's an undeniable screen legend.
Spellbound, Bells of St. Mary's, which we did recently.
Great movie. Oh, God, I love her in Bells of St. Mary. So she's amazing. She didn't do a lot of like straight up rom coms. So it's really nice to see this side of her, and it turns out we knew she was funny, but she didn't get to, like, do a lot of broad comedies.
At least
so
not
it's really cool to see her in one, and she kills it in this. She's really, really great.
Well, and she's introduced as just a supporting character. Yeah. She could be just a celebrity star who's in a few scenes.
Yeah.
And as the film goes on, she becomes more and more vital, and then we eventually learn that the movie's actually about her.
Yeah, she's the protagonist, and, like, she's not in the first, like, 15 minutes, and then she's barely in the first 45, and then she just completely dominates the second half of the film. Because Walter Matthau, in asking her to participate in this lie, he asks her out for a drink after work. And they've worked together for 10 years, completely platonic, never any sexual chemistry. They just know each other really, 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 really well. It's like they're already like what you might call an old married couple, except they don't actually like say I love you or anything like that. They know each other's patterns. They're just very comfortable around each other. And she thinks she's finally asking her out, which, again, this is a playboy. He's been out and about with many a woman this entire time, and so, you know, she's a little uncomfortable, but she's flattered. She goes out with him, and when he tells her what he wants her to do, she is offended and, frankly, disgusted at what a shitty thing he's doing. And she should be.
And she's a very straight-laced character. She's actually a very serious character. We don't see her outside of the office, but we do get the sense that she's just all business.
Yeah, she has a sense of humor, but she usually uses it for like dry, cutting remarks.
It's at this point where she gets to kind of show that she has some principles. She's like, no, I abhor lying.
Mm-hmm.
But she has a little bit of a change of heart because she knows that Goldie Hawn works at a record shop.
Yeah.
I want to live in that record shop.
Oh my god, it looks so nice, doesn't it?
There's these like young hipsters directing you, and there's like Beatles records and Monkees records,
and you know those libraries where you have to like climb up on a ladder to like get to a book, and then Rachel Weisz like knocks down a bookshelf and it knocks over like 50 other bookshelves. It's like that, but with records. Like, it's so cool. It's so hip. Quincy Jones did the soundtrack to this. There's like a hip kind of like pop music, like instrumental cover of To Sir With Love.
Oh, it's not To Sir With Love, it's Daydream Believer.
No, they have that too.
Oh, okay.
But there's also one where I was like, wait a minute, is this the song from To Sir With Love? And it is. Oh, I feel like it's, what is that called something else? The song from To Sir With Love?
I'm not sure.
No? Okay, hang on.
I don't know that one. All right.
You don't know that song? You know that song from To Sir With Love?
I know Daydream Believer plenty, but...
Oh, I know. They definitely play Daydream Believer, 100%. Right. You're right about that, and I'm not arguing. Hold on. To Sir With Love song. God bless you, internet.
Hit knows what we don't.
I got the opening wrong. It's Those Schoolgirl Days. If you wanted the moon, I would try to make a start. But you know that song?
Nope.
Okay, great song. Okay. Anyway, it's from To Sir With Love. It's by Lulu.
I know Lulu.
Yeah, and so it hadn't come out that long before this movie came out, so it's still pretty much on the radio. So she's walking by this record store. She happens to be walking by the record store with her nephews, and she sees Goldie Hawn in there. Oh, she doesn't see Goldie Hawn. She knows it's the record store. So she walks in, and she sees a young woman who she assumes is probably the person Walter Matthau is sleeping with, because it's the same age. And she starts, like, sort of just like, oh, hi. And she sort of introduces herself as Mrs. I forget his name, Walter Matthau. Mm. And then Goldie Hawn picks up on it. And then Goldie Hawn meets her. And she says, yes, I'm married to him. We are getting divorced. I'm happy to get divorced to him. Good luck to you. This is my good deed for the day, and I'm out of here. And then Goldie Hawn says, wait. And sets the rest of the movie in fucking motion. Every fucking time, we're just going to be okay, and everyone's going to get away with their lives, Goldie Hawn has the butt in her head. And she just insists on interrogating her, finding out more about her lives, and at the end of the conversation, she loves Ingrid Bergman, and she feels really bad for her, and now she doesn't want
And also, she's on a walk with her nephews.
Yeah.
But
so Goldie Hawn thinks they're her kids.
Walter Matthau has lied about having kids this whole time, so now she thinks those are the kids, and oh my god, now there's kids in this, and she's going to be okay. So in order to take the curse off of it, they have to make the line more elaborate. Now the Ingrid Bergman character has to have a fake boyfriend as well, and they all have to go out and have a dinner together and make sure everything's copacetic, because Goldie Hawn wants everything to be kind of decent and on the up and up.
Yeah.
And things continue to snowball.
Yeah, and it just gets worse and worse and worse, and Ingrid Bergman has to go more and more and more outside her comfort zone until she is getting drunk and, like, making out with young, hot poets on a dance floor, and Goldie Hawn doesn't know what to make of it anymore. She thinks she might be a sex addict, and, like... Well, it's actually not,
a lot of farcical misunderstandings.
A lot of farcical misunderstandings. What's interesting about this movie... There's a lot of things I think about this movie. The main takeaway from this movie, and I think the Academy got it right, is Goldie Hawn is a fucking star. Like, Goldie Hawn, again, this is a huge role for someone who'd barely been in anything before. And she introduces the movie, like, it's mostly her film for, like, the first 10 minutes. Like, we don't meet Walter Matthau for a while. And then she has to compete, basically, for screen time with Walter Matthau and Ingrid Bergman. And she doesn't hold her own. She fucking owns the movie. Ingrid Bergman does a wonderful job. Walter Matthau does a wonderful job. It's not like they're not bringing it. Goldie Hawn has to, and it's a really difficult job because she has to be someone who is absolutely wonderful and enchanting, and you can imagine why someone would go to great lengths to keep her in their lives. But she's also got to be the kind of person who is a bit of a busybody and gets really invested in other people's lives and makes like weird demands and decisions of them. And you can't, but without making you dislike her, you're like, oh god, now she loves Ingrid Bergman. Like, is this even worth it? And then she like smiles, and you're like, yeah, great.
She's young and kind of flighty, but she's also incredibly decent. And I think that's the good bit.
She's trying to be a good person this entire time.
I said Daydream Believer. It was
you did.
I'm a Believer. It was the other Monkees song. I just realized that.
God, those guys believed in everything, didn't they?
Yeah, they sure did. Daydreams, they just believed.
My God.
When they saw her face.
Yeah. No, I'm a daydream believer. I couldn't leave her if I daydream believer.
Walter Matthau, the cad in all of this, who keeps on trying to push these lies and make sure everything's sort of going the way he has imagined it, in a rather frustrating twist, doesn't really get a moment to reflect on
what a dick he is. He gets away with it.
So he has asked Ingrid Bergman to perpetuate all of these lies and continue to perpetuate other lies, and eventually, in so doing, like going out to like clubs and drinking and like being out there in the world, she realizes, wait a minute, romance is like a thing.
Yeah.
I can do that.
And she's an older woman. She never really had a lot of romance in her life. It seemed like she was basically resigned to it. Mm. And now she's having a great time being the object of people's affection. People are interested in her. She's dancing in public. It's not like a thing where it's like we're ruining an introvert. We're just like, she seemed happy where she was. No, she just never had an opportunity to socialize. Mm. And turns out she's really good at it. And she's having a wonderful life for a few days. Doing these horrible lies, and she feels terrible about it.
Yeah.
And yet, but you're right, Walter Math, it's weird. This is not. he never gets his comeuppance. Mm. He eventually the lie is revealed, but everything more or less turns out okay for everybody. This movie has no morals. really doesn't.
This is coming at a time like, speaking of Elliot Gould, and this was a little while later, but there were a lot of films of this era that played very fast and loose with sex and sexuality.
Yeah.
This was the late 60s. The code wasn't really a thing anymore.
Alfie had been a big hit, for example.
So,
it was another one about a cad. Yeah.
All these people are just sort of like sleeping around. I know that, this was about the time when like Key Parties and suburban infidelity was about to enter the lexicon.
Key Parties are a weird thing, by the way. If you're too young to know what a Key Party was, a Key Party was where married couples would go to a party together, you know, the husband and wife, and what happens is when they entered, they would put their car keys in a bowl. Mm. At the end of the night, after everyone's had drinks and carouse,
the men would all put it in the bowl.
Yeah, because they all came in one car. And the idea is this. Women, when they left, would pull a pair of keys from the bowl without looking, and whoever's car that was, that's who you had sex with that night.
Yep. You'd go home with that person.
That was an actual thing.
Key party.
People did. And if you ever saw Ang Lee's The Ice Storm, you know that apparently it was no fun whatsoever.
There was The Ice Storm is all about that. There's a bit about it in Kinsey, if you saw the Liam Neeson biopic of Kinsey. This idea that we get to talk about sex more openly now, and now we're in the suburbs, we're just going to start swinging around a little bit.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of that mentality was part of Cactus Flower. Mm-hmm. We're going to just sort of be frank and open about sleeping around.
Right, and I don't have a problem with that, I don't have a problem with him dating multiple people. It's the lies, it's the duplicity that is something that movies about deception usually... There's only, like, the only exception to this is, like, when, like, the lie is better than the truth. You know, like, when it's, like...
Oh, you're deceiving somebody to like, keep them comforted?
Like, this is an extreme example, but, like, something like Life is Beautiful, where he's trying to shield his child from the horrors of World War II. But, like, that's an extreme example. But, like, yeah, maybe you can get away with that or something, but... Arguably... But yeah, here's the thing. We're talking about how like Goldie Hawn is kind of navigating a tightrope in terms of she's making everyone's life a lot harder, but she's so delightful and she's so principled, you can't really be mad at her for it. And if she knew everything that was going on, she wouldn't be making any of these complicated decisions that make life harder for everyone. Mm. Walter Matthau, on the other hand, is just a dick. And the only way we have to, like, sort of latch on to him is it's Walter Matthau, and Walter Matthau was an incredibly captivating screen performer.
There's a moment near the end of this where Walter Matthau is presented with an opportunity to come clean.
Oh, yeah.
And,
The movie, we're going to tell you about the ending. The movie ends with, after everything's gone really, really bad, Ingrid Bergman goes to Goldie Hawn and says, listen, this has gone on way too long.
Yeah, she finally tells the truth.
Yeah, she said, listen, he'll tell you eventually, I'm sure. He's not a bad guy. I'll just tell you everything. I'm not his wife. This whole thing was just an elaborate ruse.
He's never been married.
Or... Yeah, he wanted to keep you in his life. He cares about you a lot, but the lie just became a whole thing. There you go. Good, best of luck to you. He'll tell you eventually, I'm sure. And then, literally, like, the next scene, Walter Matthau comes into her and says, hey, I gotta come clean. My wife doesn't want to get a divorce. And she's like, so, oh, shit.
We'll have to go back to seeing each other in secret, and I still love you. And
well, Goldie Hawn, thinking he was going to tell the truth, is obviously like, oh, this guy. Well,
and she kind of like throws it back in his face. There's a supporting character in this we haven't talked about. Igor, the screenwriter, who is the IAL Diamond stand-in.
He's basically George Segal. Wait, Peter Segal or George Segal? George Segal. He's basically George Segal in What's New Pussycat, that Barbara Streisand movie?
George Segal.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it, but
it's the same setup. He's a writer, and he's living next door to this sexually liberated woman, and their lives become intertwined, and it gets complicated. It's basically that, but he had Walter Matthau.
He's just sort of this. He's young. He's in his 20s, and you know, he's this starving screenwriter, but he's also very like flip and laid back, and doesn't really care about a whole lot. So
The Owl and the Pussycat. I said What's New Pussycat. It's called The Owl and the Pussycat.
We're getting everything.
It's been a long weekend. You have no idea.
But Vercingetorix did invent infidelity. That was that part is true. So
you can quote him on that.
If you're giving a high school report, remember that and tell that to your teacher because they will give you a high grade.
Hey, listen, you can cite us as a reference. That makes it official.
I would love to get an angry call from some high school teacher. Did you say that? When Vercingetorix surrendered to Caesar, that was the moment when infidelity was invented?
Well, not that moment. Shortly before.
It's before his surrender.
Yeah.
It's one of his other contributions to society.
That's why he had to surrender. Where were we?
We're talking about the young screenwriter character. His name is Igor.
Oh, yeah.
And he was the one who saves Goldie Hawn at the beginning.
Yeah.
And he kind of is... he's just sort of floating around, giving a little bit of wry commentary throughout most of the proceedings, but he doesn't have anything to do with the actual plot.
He's just there to be a nice guy, and you know Goldie Hawn will end up with him eventually, so like he's just waiting in the wings for the end of the movie.
He is more age appropriate for her because they're both in their 20s, and there's actually some lines of dialogue to that effect where the Ingrid Bergman character near the end, when she's just sort of had it and she's a little bit fed up and she's like, you know, I'm actually like feeling better about myself. I want to go out there. Maybe I'll have a young boyfriend like you have a young girlfriend. And Walter Matthau, like his monocle pops off. Like, you cannot have a younger boyfriend.
What?
Nobody is jowlier than Walter Matthau.
That's not entirely true.
All right. There's a few people jowlier than four or five
Sydney
people.
Sydney Greenstreet.
Okay. Sydney Greenstreet. Eugene Paulette is jowlier.
Okay, yes, Eugene Paulette. He was the guy who could do the... No one could say, like... I don't even know if he ever said it, but no one would ever be able to say the words, you're fired. Like,
you're fired.
You're fired.
The one I'll carry with me forever is, where's my breakfast?
Yeah.
He says, you can't date younger men.
Uh-huh. And because you're an older woman.
And
even just says, there's a double standard. If I date younger women, it's fine. If an older woman dates younger men, it's gross. He's being an asshole. And a hypocrite.
It's kind of weird, though, that they would bring up the double standard. Like, just say it. It's like, no, it's okay if men do it. But it's not okay if women do it.
Yeah.
And they just sort of leave it there. It's like, that's just... It's kind of fucked, isn't it?
The romantic lead in the movie is saying that.
Yeah.
The fuck, dude? But yeah, she ends up going out with him, and they make out, and for a while it looks like they slept together, although it turns out they didn't.
Yeah.
She tells Walter Matthau they did, though.
And she's also putting the moves on Senor Sanchez, one of the...
Yeah, there's like a local dignitary
He's one of the patients.
He's one of the patients, but like he's got like actually like a dignified position in some sort of...
Yeah.
He's like an ambassador from some other diplomat, country or something. Yeah. And yeah, and he comes in to get his teeth clean, and he's got a bit of a crush on her, and apparently he's got a thing for nurses, I guess. But also it's Ingrid Bergman. Why do we even need the excuse? So she's got him around the corner. And then there's also this guy that Walter Matthau knew from college who was constantly getting free dental work. And so to pay for all of that, he's got to pretend to be Ingrid Bergman's boyfriend. Mm. But he's a dick and she hates him. And that the obvious lack of chemistry is like sends off like signals to Goldie Hawn that something is wrong here. Here's the thing about this movie. It's witty. It's well written. I don't like all the characters, but I like the way they're written.
Okay.
Which is enough. And I don't have to like them. I just have to appreciate their story. It's not very funny. Is it just me? I didn't actually laugh out loud that much.
Well, it's more about the romance. It's about the misunderstanding. Yeah. It's the farcical elements of it. There's not like
I usually equate farce with humor though, and it's just I didn't laugh very much.
Well, there's not a lot of there's
back
a way
in,
to back do
in
this.
If I hit comedy without being funny, I don't know how you do.
There's a way to do this with a lot more slapstick, right? Where there's like pratfalls and people bunking into stuff.
I assume that's what Adam Sandler did. I didn't see the movie. He remade this as just Go With It with him. And I think it was Brooklyn Decker was the
youngest. That's right, yeah.
And then Nicole Kidman had a small role as well, but she just showed up. Yeah. I assume that's a wackier version. I can only imagine.
And, you know, probably a lot more pee jokes, that kind of stuff. But just Adam Sandler.
Yeah. About to say, you know, Nicole Kidman loves
scatological humor. It's a character piece. And the amusement comes from watching people kind of squirm in discomfort and trying to bend over backwards to keep the lie going. The scene where Ingrid Bergman and Goldie Hawn meet is actually, like, has a lot of comedic tension.
Yeah, because they're both kind of talking cross purposes.
Exactly, and that's not really a phrase used very often. Comedic tension, like where something silly is about to happen, and that's kind of where all the anticipation lies, where the excitement lies.
We don't talk about that enough, but just knowing that, like, oh man, that thing's gonna break.
Yeah,
you know.
Oh god! Thank goodness it didn't fall.
Maybe one of the best ones of that ever is in Wayne's World 2. They're walking down the street and they see a bunch of guys just working by the side of the road. It's like, hey, what are you doing here?
One guy's pushing a fruit cart. One guy's like, two guys have a big pane of glass.
Yeah, well, our job is to walk across the street carrying this giant pane of glass over and over and over again. And my job is to make sure we always have plenty of watermelons. And they're like, oh, okay. I wonder if this will be important later. And later on, he has to drive a car through the watermelons on the chain of glass.
But that actually pays off.
Well, it does. I'm saying you're waiting for it to happen, though. Yeah. Like, you're waiting. When is it going to... Oh, even a better one. Hot Tub Time Machine with Crispin Glover.
Okay.
At the beginning of... Hot Tub Time Machine is about a bunch of guys that go back in time to the 80s when they were, like, cool studs in a ski resort movie. And but at the front of the movie, where they're all kind of miserable middle-aged guys, they run into Crispin Glover, who is a really mean guy with only one arm. And when they go back in time, he's a really happy guy with two arms. Every single time they run into him, something almost happens to his arm. Like, oh, my arm's caught in the elevator. My arm's caught in the elevator. They're like, wait for it.
Oh,
I know, it's
free.
Fine. Never mind. Like, damn it. Like, you want him to lose his arm because they keep playing with you. Like, he's going to, like, get it caught in a meat thresher or something. And yeah, never. Meat threshers are a thing, right?
Meat thresher?
Sure.
Yeah, when you're threshing your fields of meat. My God, the meat is growing high today.
Meat's as high as an elephant's. Well, yeah. An elephant, yeah.
The meat is as high as a corn. I would get onto meat threshers. But with Cactus Flower, the payoffs are emotional payoffs. It's not a slapstick payoff.
It ultimately feels more like a drama with farcical elements.
Yeah, it's more about its tone. It's light and it's kind of silly. And ultimately, it's about, because of the title, it's about the flowering of the Ingrid Bergman character. And in fact, there's a literal symbol. She has a cactus on her desk. By the end of the movie, the cactus itself flowers. And they also comment on it.
Also, apparently, the actual thing she had was not a cactus. It just looks like a cactus. And those things that she had don't flower.
So I'll let that slide.
And any botanists in the audience are probably pissed, but everyone else is fine with it. But yeah, so yeah, it's an obvious metaphor, but it works fine.
Yeah, well, this film was directed by Gene Sachs, and Gene Sachs is also the director of The Odd Couple, which is...
That one's still funny.
Well, here's the thing about The Odd Couple. Yeah. It's actually really depressing. A lot of these stories are actually about sad people who are on the brink of suicide.
Yeah.
And that's true of Cactus Flower. Mm-hmm. That's a big element of The Apartment, which is the same screenwriter. But but The Odd Couple, Felix, the Jack Lemmon character, is completely miserable.
His wife has kicked him out of the house. Yeah, he doesn't know what to do with himself.
The setup is, he's been kicked out of the house. He's on the brink of divorce, and he is... depressed. He's in a depressed state.
And no one likes him very much. He's just kind of a fastidious little jerk, kind of.
That's how he's controlling his world. He's really, really anal retentive. He's really meticulous about everything. He needs to clean and be really neat. And he moves in with Oscar, who's the Walter Matthau character, who's just sort of like a regular blue-collar schlub who smokes and, is kind of a little bit sloppy.
His apartment's a mess or whatever, but he's a nice enough guy that he'll take this guy in. But their personalities couldn't possibly be more different, hence the odd couple. These two guys would normally never live together.
Yeah. And the movie isn't about how, they kind of hate each other and eventually they'll just learn to kind of be buddies and learn to live together. Yeah. No.
That's what Grumpy Old Men is about.
Yeah. The movie is about how much they hate each other and how living together is driving them both incredibly insane.
Yeah.
To the point where it's not funny anymore after a while.
And it does come to and this is Neil Simon. Neil Simon was good at this. He eventually comes to meaningful conclusions and they both grow as people. But yeah, it's not about just resolving the conflict of their personalities. That being said, the Linguini scene in The Odd Couple is one of the funniest of movie scenes.
Now it's garbage.
Yeah, The Odd Couple is, but here's the thing. The Odd Couple, I think, is still legitimately funny. I think The Apartment is still legitimately funny, even though it does tackle these serious issues. It knows when to keep them separate. It knows when to bring humor into the seriousness and vice versa. Cactus Flower somehow manages to have all of the elements of a farce without ever coming across as overtly whimsical. The characters are very likable. The dialogue is very spry. The situations are increasingly ridiculous. Mm. But when all is said and done, what I am invested in isn't the humor. It isn't even necessarily the romance. It's Ingrid Bergman's sort of finding herself in the second half of her life.
Yeah.
And I like that a lot. Part of me just can't get over just how I should be finding this funnier. There's this part of my brain that says I should be laughing more, and I'm just kind of not. And there's nothing wrong with that. I don't even think it's trying to. It's just the structure of it is so overtly farcical. The Marx Brothers could have been in something like this pretty easily, and it just never goes there.
I think it's a little bit more sophisticated than something the Marx Brothers would do, because the Marx Brothers kind of stripped their stories down, so they can put in more gags.
Yeah.
This one is actually very elaborate and depends on sort of mounting situations.
Yeah,
more and more complicated.
Maybe it's more of a Chaplin thing. Maybe.
What it comes from is the characters. The characters are the funny. These are funny people in an extreme situation.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel that Goldie Hawn is very funny. She makes a lot of jokes.
Yeah.
She kind of winks and smiles, but she's also very honest. So she comes across as a real person.
She does. She's great.
Ingrid Bergman, as she sort of comes into her own, starts calling people out on their crap. And that's kind of funny, too. She starts making the wry jokes. There's this, the actor that she has to pretend to be her boyfriend at first is just this sort of lecherous dental patient who has a crush on her and just she wants to have nothing to do with. And when his actual girlfriend enters the scene, there's all this Three's Company energy all of a sudden in the room. If you think Three's Company is funny.
Oh, God, John Ritter would have been great on that. Can you imagine John Ritter a stage play version of this?
He did it. It was called Three's Company.
No, I'm just saying, but John Ritter, the majesty of John Ritter, the magic of John Ritter. And by the way, I miss John Ritter so much. He was a comedic genius. He knew how to do this kind of thing better than anybody. He could do this kind of lying, farcical relationship story like he often did on Three's Company. But the magic was you never hated him for it. He somehow always managed to come across sparkling. It's just but it's John Ritter. Can he really be mad? Walter Matthau has a bit of an edge. I've actually seen, when you ever, if you grew up in the 90s, Walter Matthau at that point in his career was a funny old guy. He did two movies called Grumpy Old Men. Grumpy Old Men and Grumpy-er Old Men with Jack Lemmon. They're both perfectly funny movies. They're not amazing, but they're cute. He did Out to Sea with him and Jack Lemmon again, where they were basically grumpy old men
on a boat. They did 12 movies together.
They did a lot. But Walter Matthau mostly was doing sort of broad comedies towards the end of his career. He didn't go full Leslie Nielsen, but that was just the Walter Matthau that I knew. Going back in time, you see him play heavies. You see him in
his dark cop movies, stuff like Hopscotch and Charlie Varrick.
Charlie Varrick is awesome. You want to see Walter Matthau rob a bank and, like, kill a bunch of people. And then in the climax, he actually gets in a crazy chase with Joe Don Baker, where Walter Matthau was in a biplane and Joe Don Baker is in a car and he's trying to crash into the biplane before it can take off. And you're like, what the fuck is this movie? It is awesome. Please see Charlie Varick if you will completely, if you only know, like, older Walter Matthau when he was just kind of funny. See Charlie Varick, it'll make your eyes spin backward. It's so amazing. But he was great.
Charlie Varick's pretty amazing. I'm a Taking of Pelham guy.
But Taking of Pelham 1-2-3 is awesome.
The Taking of Pelham 1-2-3, yeah. Where he plays an overtly racist New York transit authority.
Yeah, just a shitty guy who happens to be like the only hope we have in a shitty situation.
And the joke is, you know, everybody's awful in New York, but we're going to get band together to stop some train thieves, led by Robert Shaw.
One of the great New York movies, and I'm going to say it, one of my very favorite movie endings of all time.
Oh, it's
the ending of Taking Pelham 1-2-3 is exquisite. It's so well done.
It ends with a shot of Walter Matthau giving great Walter Matthau face, and it's everything built to that moment.
Yeah. Wonderful. So yeah, I'm glad I saw Cactus Flower. I didn't love it, but I like it a lot.
To complete a thought I started earlier, we had that moment where he lies to Goldie Hawn.
Yeah.
But the part we didn't address is that the film redeems him after that. He doesn't just sort of lie and then he's discarded, which would be the appropriate ending.
Yeah.
Because he had a chance to prove himself and he failed.
Yeah, and he ends up with nobody.
And he ends up alone.
That would be the quote-unquote moral ending.
That he's finally learned his lesson.
Yeah, at least got his comeuppance.
What we have seen throughout all of this, though, is that through all of his deception, he's actually been doing something very positive for Ingrid Bergman, who is, and we learn this very slowly over the course of the movie, they are actually kind of drifting slower and slower together. So by the time they end up together, it doesn't feel inappropriate, but it also feels like he's off the hook.
He does feel off the hook. I buy them together. I feel like I shouldn't. But I buy them together.
Well, I think it's a character piece. It's about these actors.
No, I know. I'm just saying, they get to where they need to be, where, like, I'm thinking to themselves, maybe they're related. Because sometimes you watch, like, a romance or movies like that, and, like, two people end up together, and you're like, cool, you're going to break up in a month. Like, a year tops. Like, I went through so much. Do you really want to break up with them in a month?
What I would love to see is it's something like Trouble in Paradise, where they're actually like, they both turn into cads and they like go to bars and lie to people. It's like, oh no, my son died outside. And then it's like they panic. Oh no, what am I going to do? You got to go out there and save him. Oh no, he's missing. Go chase them. And then they just go home. We tricked that guy. Walter Matthau and Ingrid Bergman. Yeah, we lied really good tonight.
No,
that's their
whole thing is duplicity. It's what's going to keep them together.
Yeah.
Being
mutual con people.
Dark. I feel like that's a different movie, but okay. But my point is Ingrid Bergman and Walter Matthau have good chemistry together, and even though he's been an asshole and she is not, I do think the relationship is that might actually turn out okay, which is no small feat.
Yeah.
But again, he completely gets off the hook. He never gets anything. Goldie Hawn ends up happy, Igor ends up happy, she ends up happy, Walter Matthau ends up happy, everyone ends up more or less happy in this, which is nice, I guess. Not sure we learned anything other than I was always in love with my nurse.
yeah.
I guess.
Well, I never knew you were always right there, but there you were, always right there.
Yeah.
And now we're together. And
yeah.
You were always right there, right in front of me, kind of moment.
Yeah. Anyway. Which
is a common thing in romance.
It happens in real life, too. Yeah. I know people who are completely oblivious to the people they care about right in front of them. I've been that guy. Sorry, that's it for Critically Reclaimed. Thank you everybody for joining us. If you want to vote for the next episode of Critically Reclaimed, guess what? You can do so. You got to go over to our Patreon. That's patreon.com/criticallyacclaimednetwork. And the theme for next time is LGBTQ movies on Criterion. It's Pride Month.
Pride Month. Happy Pride Month.
Yep. Not that we need an excuse to talk about queer cinema, but it is Pride Month, so let's do it. And Criterion has an interesting selection of films, as they often do.
Their queer channel has 20 films on it, and wouldn't you know it, there's at least four that together one of us hasn't seen.
And I actually don't know a lot about these. I'm gonna let you describe to them to the best of your ability.
We haven't seen them, but we're gonna go
with what we know, and I'll do a little bit more research when I put these on the Patreon page, so we'll have a more of an accurate description of the text. First up is Paris is Burning.
That's a documentary film about drag queen culture in New York in, in like 1990.
All right, next up is Weekend.
Weekend was a recent film about a weekend between two men and just sort of the sex and the conversations that they had. And
okay, so it's like a romance.
It's like a like one or two night stand, and I think the question is like how much in love are these two people, or is this just like a fling for them? It's a talk.
Right. The Living End.
The Living End is a Gregor Aki movie.
Ooh, so I know you're happy.
It's gonna be. I'll say this. I'm fond of Gregor Aki. The Doom Generation is a big piece of shit. The Doom Generation is him being way too immature, even for me. But he has also made some pretty good pieces of work. But yeah, it's about two queer guys who go on a crime spree, as most of these films tend to be.
And then lastly, Mala Noche.
Actually, I don't know what this one is about. This is one of Gus Van Sant's earlier movies.
Okay.
And yeah, an early queer, I think it's a romance of his, from the mid-80s.
Okay, we don't know anything about that other than early Gus Van Sant, so that's exciting. Mm-hmm. So whichever film our patrons vote for, and this poll will be up for a few days, we will do on the next episode of Critically Reclaimed in a couple of weeks. Next time on this time slot, and this episode's quite late, sorry about that, it's been a rough week. We're going to have another episode of Cancel Too Soon. Mm-hmm. We're going to be talking about the forgotten Star Trek riff, Star Hike. Which, if you think it takes a long time to get to Alpha Centauri in a starship, wait until you walk it. But that'll come up next on Cancel Too Soon, and then after that, we will do the next episode of Critically Reclaimed. These shows are alternating right now. Yeah. That's how our schedule is working. If you want to listen to other shows from Whitney and myself, Patreon's a great place to do it. We have a lot of exclusive shows. We have a few more episodes left of our Holy Batman series, where we've been reviewing every episode of Batman starring Adam West and Burt Ward. We've got Only the Best. We're reviewing every single film ever nominated for Best Picture. We're a little behind on that one. We will be recording an episode soon. We have All Our Yesterdays. We're reviewing every single episode of Star Trek in order. We have commentary tracks. We're about to announce another night for our regular trivia nights that we're holding with some of our patrons. You can sign up for that tier over at patreon.com/criticallyclaimednetwork. And, of course, we have a lot of podcasts right here on the free channel. These shows have... you might have noticed ads. If you want to listen to the shows without ads, that's also available on Patreon now. So thank you everybody for listening. Please subscribe if you haven't already. Leave us a review if you haven't already. If you want to talk about anything we discussed in this episode, we would love to hear from you. Our email address is letters@criticallyacclaimed.net. Whitney, what is our P.O. Box?
You can send us an actual physical letter. Send it to the Critically Acclaimed Network, P.O. Box 641565, Los Angeles, California, 90064.
Yep, and we might read your email or letter on an upcoming episode of We've Got Mail, which will also be coming up soon in a few days. And, of course, we're on Twitter, @CriticAcclaim. I am @WilliamBibiani.
I'm @WhitneySeibold.
And until then, this is a podcast we did.
We thank you for reclaiming with us.
Yeah,
we'll think of something.
We never do.